Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I am your host for today. I'm sitting in for Juanita Watson, a regular host. Today, I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone all the way from Milan, Italy, Dr. Albert Garoli. He is the author of a new book that just came out, and it's called The Evolutionary Glitch. Now, Albert originally had his book published in Italy, and I had an opportunity to review it at that time, and I tell you, it's a great book. It's deep, it's heavy, and it's like, wow, a lot of aha moments for me. And since then, actually, he's had Loving Healing Press here in the United States at Ann Arbor, Michigan, publish it for distribution in the U.S. and Canada. Now, just a little bit about Albert. He is a very proficient health practitioner, medical researcher, and he's also an educator. And he is a specialist in Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture, herbology, biophysics, and homotoxicology. And his many, many years of experience have brought him to a real revolutionary understanding of, you know, that human neurobiology, which is clearly explained in his new book. And I encourage you to listen to this interview, find out more about it, and definitely check out The Evolutionary Glitch, because it's really, as the subtitle says, rise above the root of your problems. And he's got it. Hi, Albert.
Hi there.
I'm thrilled to be talking to you. As I said, I reviewed your book originally when it was published in Europe, and it's like, wow, you're on the cutting edge. You are on the cutting edge. And I want to ask you, it's like, you know, neurobiology, quantum physics, and then all of a sudden you throw in ancient wisdom. How does all this get put together for us, the lay people, to really understand?
All right. Neurobiology sounds like an important or difficult topic, but it's not actually, because it's based on our life and what we do every day to survive. And probably we forgot that. So in this book, we attempt to describe the biological causes for human sufferings. And it's not something new. Only the typology of the book is a bit modern, but the concept is very old. The ancient Greeks and the Tibetans with Buddhism, the ancient Hindus came up with the same idea that human beings could thrive and be cooperating together if they didn't have this tendency to rely on their ego, which in the book we call the persona. We use the term persona, derived from Greek, that means the mask, because actually what happens in the brain is when a human being develops differently from other mammals, it will create a mask in his prefrontal lobes and part of the brain, which will actually act instead of him. It will create an alter ego, a person that is different from the original one. And this formation is actually what is discussed in the book in detail. The structure, the neurological structure of the brain allows this persona or this ego to grow and to create different personalities that we study in the book. And these personalities are actually what causes personal and interpersonal conflict.
Okay, wow. Now, you mentioned ego, but you call them personas, and just kind of give me an explanation or talk about some of the personas, naming them, and then let's talk about maybe one that's most common to all of us as human beings.
As human beings, we should be integrated with our environment. We should always strive for the growth and flourishing life of everything that is around us. But in fact, there is something that doesn't happen in our brain. We don't actually do this. we end up very often, as you can see in history, with a sort of isolation in ourselves that makes us believe we're right and we have to carry our ideology on top of others. We have to confront others. So the basic core of this persona that is formed in the neural structure, neural networks of our brain, has something in common for all of us, which is isolation. So there are clear and definite neurobiological causes for this, and they are the background for our behavior and cognition. As you might imagine, the brain evolves, and it has evolved to this point, but instead of creating new opportunities, so instead of creating new ways of solving problems, has created a bigger problem, which is human conflict. This is the base of the persona. You can also imagine a persona as a strategy for survival, and as any animals, imagine tigers or chameleons or birds. They all have the same instinct of survival, but their strategy to survive is different. One animal will hide to survive. Another will attack. Another will create poison and try to inject poison through the bite. So in a similar way, humans differ in the capacity to adapt to the environment and to create different strategies to survive as one. They never survive as a group, so ecology or society and all these concepts that entail communal life or efforts for extended life in the future are not pertaining the persona, which is isolated and tends to create an environment of external conflict to reconfirm isolation. So the basic of the persona is self-confirmation. And it's very important because a human being that grows in a specific environment will have initial data. This initial data will be stored as allocation in the neural network, but they will have this defect. They will always have to confirm themselves. So there is a complete reconfirmation of the initial model, which will always enter conflict with other models. So according to the specific evolution of every human being, there is different environment where this human is growing. This environment will dictate the capacity to adapt and also the tendency to create a strategy, a fighting strategy with adversaries.
So, Albridge, do you believe that these are they innate? Are they imprints? These personas, and maybe some people may know them as egos, do you believe that they're imprints from generations back, or are they innate, or are they learned, or...
The mechanism that creates this internal state is discussed in a book as a state of anomia, or a moment in life, or multiple moments in life when the mind loses control over the environment. And in the model proposed, this state can also be measured from its effect. One of the most interesting is the sudden decrease of one hormone in the body, which is called oxytocin. Oxytocin is associated with nurturing and social behavior in all mammals. So there is a moment, which you could call the broken heart syndrome, when human beings are faced with this state of confusion. And that is a very critical moment when the initial germ of the persona is taking place.
So what I'm hearing you say that then is that it's some specific maybe incident that happens, something that impacts our life. And so then is that when this persona is formed?
Exactly. There are episodes where acute or persistent drops in this level of oxytocin create a sense of distance, a sense of non-belonging with the environment. And these are the events that will mark the neural structure of the brain in a specific defensive way.
Okay.
So we're talking about defense mechanisms.
Right. Okay, defense mechanisms. So then when a person, let's say, for example, ends up in an abusive situation where, you know, let's say the person is raped. So what happens then in this defense mechanism that you're talking about, what happens to the persona?
Even before the event takes place, sometimes there is a predisposition of the psyche of the person to experience elements of life that are not positive, sometimes just to confirm negativity. So if a child grows in an abusive environment, this will be the initial condition. And as a machine, the brain will try to reconfirm over and over the situation so that if, say, the girl that grows in this environment has a chance to make a choice between a good man and a man that is questionable, she will be oriented towards the questionable subject just to confirm the initial condition. This is why we call it a glitch, because it's not pro-survival.
Ah, so that's why the book is called The Evolutionary Glitch, because what you're talking about is that glitch. Now, in some beliefs, some people believe that these experiences are a learning process, that they come back into this lifetime, those that believe in reincarnation come back into this lifetime to experience that or, you know, make it it's unfinished business. And somehow or another that they have to experience that. How does that fit in with what your book is and what your belief is?
Certainly every occasion in life is an experience. Good ones and bad ones. It would be logical to think that a human should strive for survival and all the components of it. Therefore, even good social relationship and good health. If you take the case of a drug addict, for instance, you would see that he differs very much from the model that Mother Nature installed in our genes, because he's actually trying to damage his body through his behavior. And when you study his repetitive behavior, you will see that there is a core engine that creates a negative state and tries to reconfirm it through actions.
So when we're talking about, let's say, a drug addict, as you mentioned, and so this persona is established. Now, what happens when that drug addict, for example, goes into treatment, goes into a recovery program, and is no longer using drugs? What happens to the persona? What's the shift?
There must be a huge shift in the neural network, in the mask or the persona of a human being, in order to change a deep-rooted behavior, because behaviors always correspond to a certain brain architecture. So if you could observe the brain in a close-up, you would see that the neuron structure, the neural network changes extremely when somebody changes life. So in this case, you have a critical phase in life, and then an extreme neurobiological change that follows different behavior.
Okay, so when that change happens, we're going to still use the drug addict, the treatment program work, there is the change. What happens in the brain? What happens with the persona? If you can just explain that to us in some lay terms as to what this shift looks like.
Sure. It would look like a different architecture, so a different connection between neurons. Instead of having maybe only one or two connections or no connections, new pathways will be formed. And the larger the number of pathways, the larger the capacity of this neuron to communicate expressively and widely. And so because the persona gets engraved as a neural map in the cortex, when you have changes in neural activity, you will always have changes in the function of the body. There is no possibility for the body to behave distinctively or in a separate way from the brain. What happens in the brain is reflected in the body.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. We are speaking today with Albert Garoli. He is an author, health practitioner, medical researcher, and educator. And you can find out more about Albert and his book, The Evolutionary Glitch, on his website, theevolutionaryglitch.com. So what happens in relapse when this drug addict relapses? After a certain period of time, after the change has been made in the synapses and everything's going well, and all of a sudden there's a relapse, let's say a year later, what happened?
There's a shift in neuroplasticity, so the brain remaps, and there's always an environmental cause for change. For instance, many smokers decide to stop smoking because they don't want to mislead the loved ones, so they'll quit for love. The drug addict will have to find an important motivation to quit a behavior. And this behavior that for so many years has tried to reinstall the personal understanding that it's not worth living, or that life is hard, or that everybody is not worthy of love, and so on. All these beliefs that are false and acquired and perpetrated will collapse. And sometimes they collapse because of one effort to improve, not the self, but to improve others. Or do it, we will put the effort into improving ourselves for the external world. And this is the motivation that you can find in bettering the environment, bettering others, doing it for love, or doing it for somebody else, for a child, for a wife, and so on.
Uh-huh. So, do you believe that these personas are imprints, that, you know, the belief systems or the behaviors and so on are imprinted over the generations, or do you believe that they're actually in our genes as to how we act and react?
We do have a sort of gene transmission of character, so that not only are eyes are blue or green, but we also have some behavior that we maintain, or some structure, physical structure that we maintain. But there is a huge effect over the brain plasticity, the neuroplasticity, that is caused by learning processes. So basically, there is one way that our brain uses to learn, and this is what causes the glitch. It's a false state of learning, where we create a personality that is a substitute for what we are, a sort of compromise or adaptation. So it's not genetic in itself, and it can be created through conditioning, as it is expressed in the book. We talk about conditioning and its form as cause or possible cause of the persona.
Okay, so we keep talking about this glitch. How do we unglitch it?
Like,
do you have a magic formula?
We go through that process in the book, and we try to analyze what the ancient tried to do through meditation, through other forms. We come up with one of the traditions, which was called alchemy in the Middle Ages, and there was alchemy in China and India long, long ago. And the term doesn't stay for the transmutation of lead into gold, but it's
stands for something really different. Alchemy means to transform this internal state that we describe as self and to merge it into something bigger. The Buddhists came up with the idea of the state of enlightenment, which is actually what you achieve after you process all your conditioning, all your past conditioning that were tattooed, so to speak, in the brain, and you reacquire a different state of being, a different way of looking at your surroundings. And they called it enlightenment because this would be the effect you have, almost like you're reborn, a second birth. And you're reborn in a world that is not made of your conditionings and all your information that you acquired through society or parents and all this information that were massively stuck one on top of the other. But now you're free to see the world as it is. And this is sometimes a fleeting moment. The book would describe it as a moment that can be acquired and can be very fleeting and quick at the same time, but extremely rewarding.
So in your book, you cover the six different personas, and as the reader goes through, they can pretty much decide which persona that they, you know, which ones that they have and what they really need to work on. So once that has been established, what can the reader do about it?
It is important to understand what kind of neural network the brain has created, because every specific network will have a specific defense mechanism. So if you identify it, it's almost like knowing a password to enter an email account or to enter a bank account. You need a password. You need to know how it will behave when faced with extinction, because this is what you're trying to do. When you're fighting the ego, the persona that has an individual isolated life and is hosted in your neural network, you need to know how it will behave if you try to get rid of it, because it will behave. It will try to make you sick. It will try to lie to yourself. It will try to filter and hide information. It will try to pull all the tricks it has in the bag to continue its existence. And its existence is in the conscious neural network that we use to experience life. And it actually occupies the space, creating an entity that then controls our emotions, our perceptions, and basically our destiny.
You know, that ego is so strong. Sometimes it's just really, really difficult to fight it off and, you know, make that path. But I know that in your book, you certainly do have exercises, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about the exercises, because, you know, this is a deep subject. And I'm sure that some of the listeners are saying, whoa, you know, how am I going to figure out what persona I am? What am I going to do? And then what am I going to do once I know? So I'd like you to just kind of dispel that to our listeners, and it's really not that difficult. Your book is really user-friendly, but I want you to voice that to our listeners.
Okay. We try to make the book as friendly as possible because the topic is very, very deep, and it requires time. So when you approach a problem like an existence of a human being, you have to take into account that it will need time. So it's not only a reading. It might require years to understand what happens inside your neural networks in your brain, and to learn to interpret how you react to external stimulations. The first advice I have is to take it slow and to understand what conditioning is, what it might create, cause in a person, and also to consider that all the systems of belief that exist are, so to speak, relative, and they cannot be seen as definite. And once this is understood, you might try to see and explore your own system of belief, which is not right nor wrong, it's only acquired. So that's the second step. And then very slowly, as you go through the book, there is a list of exercises. And there's a list of practices that you can try again, very slowly, trying to understand what they mean. And every state will be associated with a biological change. For instance, when you reshape part of the brain that is controlling emotions and behavior, serotonin is released in the body as a reward. This substance, serotonin, is always associated with a state of well-being. So the emotions, the perception of the environment will change. And it is the same environment that was there before. But your internal state has changed. So you perceive it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's, you know, attitude. I mean, there's just so many things that come into play here. In your book, Albert, you say start with the heart.
Yes.
And that's such an important place to start, isn't it? Because it's really, that's where it is. Just tell us a little bit about starting with the heart.
Right. When you think of your life, when you're pondering upon your life, it's almost like you were listening to a very delicate, very faint sound, almost like the sound of your heart. When you start with something important in your life, you always go slowly and try to understand what is important, what is significant, and what is indispensable in your life. So this is the time when you drop everything else, when you drop what is not fundamental. Also because you have a certain number of years which you can do this activity. We don't live forever, so we have to give the best of our time and to start with really what really drives us in life. We need to identify what really makes us happy. And sometimes it's not only an action, like a profession. It might be a place. I see very often that a person that is sad, depressed, and maybe full of rheumatic pains in one place is a completely different person when she moves to a different environment and a different climate, different people, different traditions. So almost like a seed that you can put on top of concrete, and it will not germinate. Many situations are like this. We have a seed that must find the perfect ground where to be nourished and nurtured and watered, thus creating life and abundance. So every one of us is a specific seed, which is only, it's personal, it's individual, and it's not a standard. So if in the community we're pushed to become quarterbacks or football players or soccer players, and if you're not a soccer player, you're not considered, you have no value. Maybe if your seed is not the one of a soccer player but the one of a musician, it's not your right community. You need to migrate, to change. This is the initial effort. You should not always seek for confirmation and standardization. The important part of starting with the heart means to start with yourself, discovering what you're good at, what you like, regardless of your environment.
You know, that is such a good point. I'm always, saying go within and check out what's going on within, and I so agree with you. I mean, if you have to move to another environment, another community, then do so. That is so important. One thing, Albert, you claim in your book that the persona is really responsible for many of the problems that we're having in the world today. For instance, the ongoing war, the poverty, the illnesses that are happening. You know, the tension, all the stuff. I call it stuff because there's so much stuff that is going on. How do you explain that this is possible, that, you know, this persona is responsible for all this?
It's very easy, because if you consider a mechanism that creates isolation, there will be recognition of non-self. Even in the body, if anything filters through the defenses, through the immunological defenses of the organism, this substance, like a bacteria or even a protein, which is coming from the environment, will be seen as an enemy. So every non-self is considered a threat. And this is a common situation you will find in every organism. So if in the body you have a created brain-simulated condition where cells consider other cells, non-self, they will attack them. And so even in the body, you will have what you might call autoimmune diseases. Allergy is also a condition where the body sees an allergen and tries to attack it. That's creating allergy, allergic reactions, inflammation, asthma, and so on. So in a similar way, if every human being has a different opinion and considers individual and sees another as a possible threat, war is not difficult to see in this kind of scenario.
Well, that's such a good point. Gosh, Albert, you know, this has been just a real pleasure talking to you, and I just want to tell the listeners, you know, this is a heavy topic. It sounds like the book is heavy. It is, but you know, it really isn't. It's more of a workbook and really taking time to go into it, understanding who you are, where you are, what your persona is, and what needs to be changed. And actually, in the end, it becomes to be a very simple exercise. And I really want to thank you, Albert. And listeners, what you can do is find out more about Albert and his book on his website, theevolutionaryglitch.com. And I've been on his site. He's got all kinds of things going on. And you can also log into his Facebook page, and he has group discussions there. And I really encourage you to take the time and check out this book, The Evolutionary Glitch by Albert Guaroli. You know, it really is cutting edge. It's very time sensitive because we're going through a lot of what I call stuff right now. And what he's been giving us is something that's just really in the forerunning of everything else and understanding what is going on in our society, but most of all, what is going on in ourselves. So again, Albert, gosh, thank you so, so much for taking the time, calling in all the way from Italy, and having this really delightful insight.
Thank you very much, Irene.
And thank you. And I'm your host, Irene Watson. Thank you very much for listening, and bye for now.